It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We've discussed on this program the best of lists Pittsburgh has found itself on of late, indicating the Steel City is one of the most livable, affordable, and hippest in America. But as a new regional study titled Pittsburgh Today and Tomorrow 2013 tells us, there is plenty of room for improvement. Joining us in Studio A to discuss the concerns Pittsburghers have about the quality of life in their city, our Pittsburgh Quarterly publisher, Doug Hoik. Doug, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And also reporter Jeffrey Frazier is with us in studio. Jeffrey, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having us.
If you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. What concerns do you have about the quality of life in Pittsburgh, particularly as they pertain to this study? Call us at 412-246-2002. Let's begin with the good news and some numbers released by Pittsburgh Today this week. The total number of jobs in the Pittsburgh region increased last year. Gentlemen, what about the record number of jobs in 2012? Doug Hoik, let's start with you.
Yeah, well, we've been seeing very strong and broad-based economic growth here for the past several years compared to regions across the country. And at PittsburghToday.org, we compare Pittsburgh against 14 other regions. We're seeing we have a diversified economy, which and we've been helped by a lot of sectors, banking and finance, eds and meds, and the natural resources. So we're seeing the record number of jobs. We're one of only three places in the country, Dallas, Knoxville and Pittsburgh, where the GDP per capita is actually higher than it was at pre-recession levels. We're seeing this growth, albeit slow but steady, as we have been. We're seeing labor force numbers higher than ever, and that's you see that with the job numbers. We have more jobs than we've ever had.
What do you find, Jeffrey, with economic indicators? What are you seeing?
Well, I think that one of the growth sectors that we've seen in the last couple of years is tourism, where there's more than $8 billion has been brought into the region. I think that was in 2011, and the employment in that sector is well over 100,000 people, and that has grown by almost 6% over the last 4 or 5 years.
We've weathered the recession well. But what are you seeing for the future, particularly when it regarding our recovery being quicker, but with other cities passing us? So if we're seeing, say, 1% job growth and other cities are seeing 5%, is this alarming?
No, I don't think it is. What we used to see back in the big steel era was that Pittsburgh would dive into a recession and come kind of roaring out as the engines of industry leap back to life. In 10 years ago, we were slower going into recession and slower coming out. This last great recession, we kind of had the best of both worlds, where we were slow going in and we led in job growth coming out. The fact that our job growth, which frankly over the last 5 years, we were the only one of our 15 benchmark regions that actually had job growth, that all the rest of them were negative. The fact that some of them are kind of starting to come back to life and our job growth is relatively not as high is not a problem. It's kind of the slow and steady wins the race. I mean, clearly we want to see continued job growth, but we're seeing it. And the expectations are that things in Pittsburgh will continue on a steady, solid pace.
Other good news, population decline, which was a serious concern a few years back. This study shows for the past few years, more people have been moving into the region than leaving it. How big a change is this, Jeff or Doug? Well, Jeff, go ahead.
It's huge. Back when in the early 1980s, for example, when the industrial sector began to decline, we were averaging close to 50,000 net migration. That's 50,000 fewer people than were moving in. More people were moving out than moving in. Now it's in the last 4 years, it's reversed for the first time in decades. And it's being driven primarily by younger folks, young adults under the age of, let's say, 34 or so. They come here in pursuit of employment opportunities. And so that's important for the region for a number of reasons. I mean, it makes us, since we're such an old region, so to speak, it gives us a hedge against this aging population, which is important with our population figures too, because births and deaths. There's still more people die in this region than are born, and that affects our population. But migration numbers are improving, have been improving for the last 4 years, and that's a very positive sign for the region.
When you say improving, you mean that younger people are moving in.
Younger people are moving in, and more people are moving in than moving out.
These people, the young are moving in because, I mean, they're generally more mobile. When you have an unemployment rate that's beneath the national average for 5 or 6 years in a row, the word starts to get out. There are more jobs here. And these are also younger people are less likely to be underwater in a mortgage. All in all, the youthization of Pittsburgh is great. We're seeing it across some 50 Pittsburgh city neighborhoods. I mean, these are the people who are going to be bringing the vital new ideas. They're going to be, comprising the workforce. It's a major kind of point of inflection turnaround, and it bodes well for our area.
You mentioned jobs are certainly one of the contributors to bringing young people into Pittsburgh from other parts of the country. What are some of the other factors? What are the things that the young people are finding about Pittsburgh? Could it be linked to the tourism, for example? Could it be are the things that attract the tourists that make people want to come here and check this place out the same things that might be attracting young people to come here permanently?
There's been a lot of buzz, certainly, whether the G20 a number of things where Pittsburgh has suddenly its image has shed. It's whatever the new Portland, et cetera.
There's the G20, and then there was the young world, right, just this
absolutely.
Past fall.
So those are big, but also the cost of living here is much lower than most cities. And when you're going through a tough, recession and a slow recovery, people see that and they notice it. And across all sorts of quality of life indicators, Pittsburgh does well, and that word is getting out.
Our number is 412-246-2002 if you want to join the conversation, 412-246-2002, as we talk about this study that talks about some of the positive factors regarding the quality of life in Pittsburgh, but also looks at some of the concerns that people have. We have Jeff Frazier, a reporter who is with Pittsburgh Quarterly, also Pittsburgh Quarterly publisher Doug Hoik. They are among the people who have teamed up on this study, looking at this regional study titled Pittsburgh Today and Tomorrow 2013. If you have a comment or question, we'd like to hear from you. Again, our number, 412-246-2002. Are you new to the region? What attracted you to Pittsburgh? We'd like you to share your story with us, perhaps a love story of how you found Pittsburgh and what has brought you here. On to some areas of concern, gentlemen, one of which is a big one, transportation. Where do we stand in this study with mass transit, roads, and bridges? Jeffrey.
Well, funding. It's, that is the concern. A stable funding mechanism for mass transportation is something that has been elusive for several years, and it's a problem, and it has resulted in cutbacks for service in the Port Authority in Allegheny County, a couple in the last 3 or 4 years. One huge proposed service reduction was avoided last year, but it's still or something similar is still possible. It's, like I said, and the same with roads and bridges. We have probably the highest number of structurally deficient bridges of any region in the nation. And a big reason for that is we have a lot of bridges.
And it's not good in a city of bridges to have bridges that are suffering from structural defects.
No.
You know, Paul, if I could just – I just want to throw out and let people know, this report, Pittsburgh Today and Tomorrow, which is done by the nonprofit Pittsburgh Today, which is a kind of an information group out of Pitt, supported by foundations, they're simply – I want to make a plug because there really isn't this kind of in-depth reporting anywhere else in the city with this annual report. And we're getting into some of these details, but this is a real resource that people here, if they're really interested in knowing about Pittsburgh, most cities don't have this kind of thing. You know, I encourage them to see the whole report at PittsburghToday.org. It really is, if you're really interested in seeing the mosaic pieces and the picture of the region as a whole, you really get a great sense of that from this. So forgive me.
Pittsburgh. No, that's quite all right. I'm glad you mentioned that. People can go to PittsburghToday.org to get more information to really dive into these numbers. And we'll also put a link to that on our website at WESA.FM. I want to get back to the transportation funding. And Doug, maybe you can chime in on this. The fate of the region's commuters, really, it hinges on a state funding decision, and not just regarding buses and electronic trains in Pittsburgh, but also the trains that travel from Pittsburgh, the Amtrak route going from Pittsburgh to Harrisburg, which ultimately leads people to Philadelphia and New York and points beyond. People want it. They need it to ease the congestion on the roads, but we still don't know where it stands.
Well, you know, people tend to think about public transit as, you know, getting other people to work. You know, I have a car and I live in the suburbs, whatever. People think that way. And so across the state, there often isn't the appetite to fund it. But if you look at Pittsburgh, you know, the fuel that drives our economic engine is our workers. And some 50% roughly of the workers who work downtown, which is the main area, get to work via, you know, public transit. I mean, maybe it's a social equity issue, but it's really a primary economic issue for our area. And this is something the governor has put forth a plan. It's something that if we want to have a functioning economy, not to mention the fact that there's simply not the kind of parking downtown that's necessary, that if these 20% cuts, as I recall, that would go into effect in the fall, if that happens, we'd have gridlock, we'd have a lot of problems. We'd have a lot of congestion. It's a critical issue, and it's really a failure of government in our state that we haven't come up with a good solution yet.
Go ahead, Jeffrey.
Well, and it's a problem. Mass transit is an issue that affects a lot more people than those who ride the rail and bus service. The Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission looked at the data and did a scenario of it was actually a 35% service reduction for the Port Authority last August. They did a forecast as to what that would mean for commuters, and I think it was a nightmare. But the one thing that I think really drives home the point was once you got downtown, it would take you longer to get downtown, but once you got there, the nightmare really begins. 90% of the parking spaces have already been spoken for, so that leaves under 4,000 parking spaces available for roughly 20,000 additional vehicles. So there essentially wouldn't be a place for everybody to park. And if you look at that scenario, you could see why there are a lot of downtown businesses as well as neighborhood organizations advocating for a stable funding mechanism for the Port Authority specifically, but mass transit in general.
Well, really what this is not just an economic issue, but a quality of life issue. It is an environmental issue because the more cars that are on the road, the more pollution there is. Pollution-wise, we are a cleaner city than we used to be, but we still have serious problems with air quality here to the point where that is driving some people out, is it not?
It's certainly we've been in attainment, as Jeff reported, for the first time in years. It certainly is a major quality of life factor. You know, on the transportation, I just want to mention we had several forums last fall with this One Young World, and one of the main concerns forums with young people, one of their main concerns was transportation. And certainly they talk about the environment, too. In terms of the environment, the air quality, the Heinz Endowments has really been spearheading through the BREATHE project, local efforts and awareness that we need to do things. And Jeff is more aware that a lot of the, I can't remember if it's 70% of the kind of fine particulate pollution that we get comes in from the West. And there are various interstate things that have to happen there. But it really is, it's not just, for instance, somebody might say, well, you know, it's the CEO of that company's problem that's creating the pollution. But it's, you're right to say mass transit's part of it. But even on the individual levels, our own habits, whether it's with air, you know, smart, you know, with air pollution or whether it's water, water is another major asset that we have that we can't squander. These are all things that, as a community as a whole, we really need to get our hands around and start, you know, being kind of proactively smart about it.
And mass transit would certainly help with the traffic problem if more people are using buses and trains to get around than or elevated trains as opposed to driving to work. What about traffic in this city? What has this study shown us about the traffic situation in Pittsburgh and what's being done to deal with it? Jeffrey.
I just would like to make a note that Doug had mentioned in terms of air quality, the region being in attainment for the first time in a long time. That's for fine particulates. And it's the federal annual standard that we finally were in attainment in 2011, I believe. We're not in attainment, and we still violate the Clean Air Act in terms of ozone, and reducing traffic and congestion would go a long way, you know, to help ease that issue.
You know, in terms of the congestion, it used to be in the last 15 years that Pittsburgh was one of the least congested cities, that our commuting time was very low. And a lot of that, and that was a great quality of life thing, we've seen the congestion and the commuting times rise. Now, some of that is because our economy is stronger. So they kind of are, you know, the black and white of the same issue. But we're still a relatively, despite what some people may think, as a metropolitan statistical area, our, you know, several counties, we're still a relatively easy place to get around.
Before we go on to some other issues, just in terms of the economy here, we had Judy in Pittsburgh who couldn't stay on the line, but she had a question about whether job growth and new people coming into Pittsburgh is largely influenced by Marcellus Shale. What is the role of fracking in economic development and job growth in Pittsburgh?
The fracking has been, during the teeth of the recession, when there wasn't much happening in, you know, across the country, we were a relative boom in terms of Marcellus energy activity. So that was something that really kept our economy percolating. In the last, I'm going to guess, say 18 months, perhaps a little longer with natural gas prices being very low, there's been relatively less activity. But certainly the Marcellus industry has been a major contributor to job growth. As again, as I mentioned, our banking and finance industries are a virtual anomaly across the country. And the eds and meds have been very stable during that time. But Marcellus has been an important part of it.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and my guest, who you just heard, one of whom, Doug Hoik, is Pittsburgh Quarterly publisher, and also with us is reporter Jeffrey Fraser, authors of a new regional study titled Pittsburgh Today and Tomorrow, 2013. Public safety is another area of concern in this study, and there's a section of this report called The Path to Tragedy, Pittsburgh Study Profiles Young Killer and Victims. This study concludes boys who become serious criminal offenders are not psychopaths who act unpredictably. Instead, they tend to follow developmental pathways, very orderly progressions that lead them to delinquency and violence. This is a chilling finding. Jeffrey, what can you tell us about those developmental pathways? What are they?
Well, first of all, this was a study that's been going on for, you know, at least a couple of decades, and the principal investigators at the University of Pittsburgh, Dr. Rolf Lober. You're correct in the in summarizing it that, you know, the findings in general show that it's not psychopathic kids or a handful of psychopathic kids that become convicted homicide offenders, but boys who follow a have certain traits throughout their early development, and one is an early and a history of offending. Now it could start as misdemeanors or small things, aggravated a small, then graduate to assault, and a past criminal history is certainly one. Growing up in a bad neighborhood is another important factor. Poverty, of course, is another. An unemployed mother, for example, is another one of the multiple factors that they found that are consistent among not just kids who are convicted of homicides, but also their victims.
When you say unemployed mother, they're talking specific, a lot of broken homes.
A lot of broken homes and right. Growing up in a broken home or a dysfunctional family.
Looking at education, declining enrollment continues in our public schools. How much longer can we keep the quality of public education at acceptable levels in Pittsburgh if the enrollment keeps going down?
Well, I think Jeff and I were talking, and this is really the declining enrollment is a national demographic trend. It's clearly a challenge. I mean, when you have in Pittsburgh, for instance, the Pittsburgh Promise, which is designed to kind of stanch that flow and hopefully attract some people from outside the city limits and keep people in the city. It's one of these major tides that's difficult to, you know, you can't say we're going to just turn it around. And so I think it relies on people to be innovative and do the best they can under the circumstances. That means perhaps being nimble, being able to change, having institutions that are both nimble and being able to change and adapt to and adjust to the circumstances as they find them.
And it's not just public education as well. The trend is it's private enrollment. Private school enrollment has been trending downward as well. Just fewer young children.
One last thing I wanted to talk about before we wrap this up, and there is a section of this report that talks about social equity. What questions does this survey raise about social equity, Doug?
Well, we had in November of 2011, Pittsburgh Today completed with our partners at University Center for Social and Urban Research at Pitt the most major survey of residents in our region in close to 100 years. And one of them, which was fairly stark, the findings, were the differences between how African-Americans and non-African-Americans are doing around here. And there were, for instance, at that point, the overall unemployment rate for our region was 6.7. African-American was 14.1. Now, we only were able to get that because we had this huge sample size. You can't usually get an African-American unemployment rate. So it gives a window. Economic privation, health problems, across the board, it's kind of a tale of two cities in that regard. So you have, in terms of our complexion, so to speak, you have that those differences. Social equity, it's interesting, just harkening back to demographics, we don't have many international immigrants, but those whom we do get are the most educated in the country. So I think it's among our 15 regions, we are the whitest of the 15 regions. We have a very low, relatively low Hispanic population. And so in terms of those are the realities. In terms of the social equity efforts, and I know you all are having a forum tomorrow night about the African-American middle class.
Indeed.
These are issues that the community needs to continue to work on.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Doug, because tomorrow 90.5 WESA's Essential Pittsburgh, that's us, we're going to host a public forum on the black middle class in Pittsburgh. It'll take place here at the WESA WYEP studios in Bedford Square, right here on the south side. Doors open to the public at 6:30 tomorrow night. And for more information, you can go to the events page on the 90.5 WESA website. That's WESA.FM, and again, this is a way that we can continue this conversation about the social equity or inequity that exists in Pittsburgh. My guests for this segment have been Pittsburgh Quarterly publisher Doug Hoik and reporter Jeffrey Fraser, authors of a new regional study titled Pittsburgh Today and Tomorrow 2013. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks.
Coming up, business contributor Rebecca Harris on the controversy surrounding Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, When Essential Pittsburgh Continues on 90.5 WESA.